Welcome to my podcast, Katie Piper's Extraordinary People. As the title suggests, in each episode, I talk to an amazing person, somebody who has overcome some kind of adversity. It doesn't mean there's a happy, fluffy ending to everybody's story, but they've managed to get back to their kind of normal and make the best of what they have, whatever it is. Subsequently, going on to inspire others. I hope this episode will help you in the way that it's helped me. Today, I'm joined by an Olympian who has achieved the highest sporting accolade, Olympic gold in 2012 and silver in 2016. She achieved this in one of the toughest sports, having to excel in seven disciplines, including 100 metre hurdles, high jump, shot put, 200 metres, long jump, javelin throw, and 800 metres, all of which make up the heptathlon. Having retired from athletics, she's a mother and has launched her own app. Welcome to the podcast, Dame Jessica Ennis-Hill.
Oh, thank you.
And now, Jess, we are actually on location with you today. We're here in the studio where you've been doing a photo shoot. So please, everyone, excuse the background noises, but it's very authentic today. I suppose what I've admired about you is your lack of weakness and your determination in the face of struggle. And it's something that I've found you a real help to myself in my own journey. But just reading your intro like that, it's quite overwhelming to think what you've achieved in your career, but also in your personal life, becoming a parent as well. How do you feel when you hear people list your achievements like that?
Yeah, I mean, it still feels really strange to hear it. I think when you're in the thick of whatever you do, and when I was in the thick of my career, you never really have that time where you really stop and think about what you've achieved to that point, mm-hmm. what you want to achieve. And it's only until you retire that you look back. And yeah, hearing those achievements, it always gives me like goosebumps. I always feel just really, really relieved that I've achieved it, and yeah. I can sit here and feel happy with the career that I've had, but also just really proud because I know what a journey it's been through, you know, the whole of my career, and particularly, you know, in the later years with having my son and coming back. It's some massive challenges.
With that kind of thought of, you know, quite overwhelming achievements, is it hard to have those highs? Like, then do you have to have the lows as well?
Yeah, I think the biggest kind of time I experienced that was with the London Olympics. Mm. You know, you work so hard for so many years to get to that one point that you never quite think you'll get to. Mm-hmm. And then you get there, you achieve your dreams, which you never think is going to happen.
Right.
You think, you believe it, but you think, oh, something's going to get in the way, something's mm-hmm. going to happen. And actually, I got to that point where, you know, I won a home Olympics and been the face of the Olympics, which was just the most bizarre thing. And then after having time off and then coming back into the cycle of training again, you know, going back to winter training, doing yeah. hill runs in Sheffield and the weight sessions, and, you know, being an athlete it's not a glamorous life.
Of
You're
course,
there doing
yeah.
sessions by yourself or with a small group most of the time. There's no one cheering at the sidelines. It's just
yeah.
you get on with hard work.
And quite isolating.
Yeah, though. It can be really isolating, and it's a very strict routine that you just follow, and you just do it and do it and do it.
Yeah.
And I did find it hard at that stage in my life because I kind of felt that, gosh, I've achieved all I could ever want to achieve on the biggest stage ever.
And at a young age.
At a young age, and now I'm back again, you know, back into the cycle. And that
yeah.
was the point where I found it the hardest, because I felt that, you know, I'd reached that pinnacle, and what was going to keep me motivated to move forwards.
Yeah, I did wonder, because I felt like we all have aims and goals, and some take longer to achieve, some we don't achieve.
Mm.
But like you said, if you achieve them, then are you kind of aimless and floating around, and all your energies were focused into something? And
yeah.
Because it doesn't matter what your financial situation is or how successful you are, everybody needs a purpose.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think sometimes if you are more successful or in a privileged situation, it can make it harder to feel unhappy because you
yeah.
feel guilty.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. And I think that was the feeling. It was kind of, my coach was very much, you know, we've got the world championships the following year, and we've
yeah.
got this and we've got this. And he could always see a stepping stone and something else to work towards. But for me at that stage, I did feel quite like deflated and
yeah.
unsure what
Empty.
Was my clear, yeah,
yeah,
my clear focus. And And thankfully for me, it was, you know, falling pregnant with Reggie and, you know, in the end of 2013. And that gave me like a huge sense of motivation and a huge challenge in a completely different way that I never even thought about. It was the challenge of, you know, stepping away from my sport and my career, having that massive physical change, mental change, and then having that aim of trying to recreate what I'd already achieved in a completely different way as a completely different person.
I did wonder, because I was, you know, I was thinking about you becoming a mother, and I was thinking about my life is almost two separate lives. I have my work life, then my private life with my kids. And I always feel more confident in the one that I do the most.
Yeah.
So when I work loads, I feel really confident at work.
Yeah.
And people that don't have kids are like, oh, you've got a few days off now, you can be with your kids. And, you know, I never really talk about it on Instagram because it's a short place to talk about it. And people I know will criticize me who are parents. But I sometimes then feel disconnected from my children because it's not like just on your day off slotting in and doing things, because you're not used to doing those things.
Yeah.
And similarly, if I don't have work for, say, a long period and I'm just with the kids all the time, when I go back to work, I'm a bit nervous.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's not as easy as work, kids, like it's very different.
No, and that was one of the hardest things, because I think before I had Reggie, in my mind I was thinking, yeah, I'm going to do both. I'm absolutely going to do both. I'm going to bring him to the track. He's going to come to competitions. I'm going to do it. It's going to be fine. But actually that was a very, very different situation, because I couldn't just switch myself off.
No.
You know, I couldn't go and do a really fast run and run my best times over the hurdles while Reggie was on the sideline. Because if he made the slightest noise or he needed me, I was just, my mind was just, you know, all over the place.
That's your instinct. It's built
in, isn't it? Yeah, it is. And it's that having that kind of divide. So it's really hard as a mum. I think it's one of the most challenging things to create that balance and to do both, you know, because you want to do both sides the best you can, you know, you can do them.
Especially if you're used to always achieving some kind of perfection that's ingrained in you.
Yeah, you know, exactly. Hard. So I had that overwhelming feeling of, I want to be the best mum ever.
Yeah.
Like all mums do, you want to give them the best opportunities and make their life amazing. And, you know, it creates a lot of pressure for yourself and for you as a mum, because, you know, perfection isn't always achievable in every area of your life, and you have to, you know, have some little failures along the way to get there, I think.
I think also, if you're used to being able to control most things in your life, when you have kids, you actually realise you can't control that. You can't control the outcome. You can't control how they're going to react to you. You can't control on day-to-day basis how they're going to behave.
Yeah,
you know, so.
I think that's such a good point. I think when you're like a really logical person, and particularly as an athlete, you train and you do this and you do that and everything's really structured, and then you have a baby and it's like, oh, my life's
why
the
aren't you sleeping?
And, oh, you won't have a spoon in your mouth. What?
Yeah.
And it's just like everything is just crazy.
Uh-huh.
And it's amazing in so many ways, because you look back and you think, oh, my gosh, that's so funny. Like, you know, those days of randomness, and every day is different. But I don't think anything really prepares you for
that. And if you're used to a schedule, it's hard to let go and just be disorganized.
And I had to really kind of keep some kind of structure, because if I didn't, I wouldn't be able to get back to training.
Of
so
course,
I tried to get Reggie into a routine.
That's
and
good.
Tried to get him sleeping. And to be fair, he was pretty good in comparison to my daughter.
Yeah.
So it was okay, but it is still a massive, massive change to life.
Yeah. And what about, I mean, this isn't based on vanity, like with you, with your body's your career, you know, it's your investment. And I would imagine you've been very disciplined with nutrition and health. When your body changed in pregnancy, how did it feel? Because it's another time where you can't be in control.
Yeah, I think ironically, the first time I was pregnant, I loved it. I just completely embraced it, because I'd obviously never been pregnant before.
It's exciting.
It's so exciting. You don't understand or know how your body's going to change. And I'd gone from this really toned six pack and everything just been like really tight.
That's
and
how
coiled.
We know you.
To, you know, there's a huge bump, not really being able to see my toes, not being able to move and, you know, in the way that I used to. And I found it amazing. I had a really nice pregnancy. I stayed active and I kept running. And
were you able to stay active to the end?
Yeah,
that's
I think
good.
I stopped running around about 33 weeks.
That's
but
good.
That was only because, you know, my hamstring started to hurt and I felt that I was doing probably more damage than good. You know, your body tells you when you've done enough. And yeah, I just thought it was incredible the way, you know, your body can change so much and grow your child. It's, yeah, really amazing.
And the second child, did you feel the same? Because with my first pregnancy, I was like you, excited. I had every app, every book, and bought all these lovely things. Second child, I didn't buy anything, didn't download the app. I was just like, I'm just alive. Yeah. It's good. I'll go to work. Yeah, it's fine.
So true. So the second time, obviously, I was retired at that stage. Right. So I still, you know, kept active, not to the extent that I did before, but I was still very much active, still running and doing things. But yeah, I felt like, oh gosh, my body's changed really quickly.
And you're older.
This time. You feel, you feel all the pregnancy symptoms way more than I did the first time. Mm. And I felt...
And your stomach stretched once, so it's kind of looser, do you think?
Yeah, I definitely felt like everything just went, oh, yeah, we've been there, let's go there again really quickly.
Yeah.
And then you've got, you know, you've got a toddler as well and you're busy, you know, running around after them. There's no napping. It's just life is full on.
And did you get the six-pack back?
Yeah, so I would say I do always look at myself. Yeah. You know, 2012 body. Yeah. And I'm like,
I think we've all got that in our heads.
I should not look at that anymore. And I think your body changes massively.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, you can get your body back and you can work hard, of course, but it's never 100% the way it's going to be. And that's not a bad thing because, you know, you've grown your child, you've changed, you're a different person. But yeah, I love exercising in a totally different way now. I feel that I'm strong, I've got a good core, and I just feel happy and confident in the way I look.
Yeah.
And that's, for me, that's the most important thing. And, you know, having kids now, I want them to see that. And
yeah,
I want them
to copy you.
Be confident in the way they look. And also with exercise, I want them to have a good relationship with exercise and enjoying sport and exercise.
A healthy one, And you've actually launched an app to help other people with exercise, is that right?
Yeah, so when I retired, I was unsure kind of what I wanted to do. And obviously exercise and fitness is... been, you know, the main thing that has run through my whole life. And when I retired, the fitness side of it during pregnancy and postnatal was something that's really, like, I was really passionate about. Because I think that so many women, it's such a hard time because your body changes so much and there's so much information out there. And I definitely felt like I'm nervous to do certain things.
Because people get really well, and sometimes they get the advice, don't exercise at all. And actually that's quite harmful.
Exactly. And I think that's the thing that most women probably would do. If you're unsure or scared that you're going to harm your baby, just stop.
Yeah.
You just think, I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
Naturally, you know, I had some great people around me. I had a fantastic physio and coach, and they guided me with the right exercises to do, when to do them, how to do them safely, and which were the most beneficial exercises.
Right, okay.
And that kind of made me feel that I want to put this in a way, in a format where women can go and find these exercises and know that they're doing the safe exercise in the right way.
Yeah.
And can feel confident about exercising through their pregnancy and after as well.
And it's actually the stuff that you did when you were pregnant.
Yeah. So my physio put together, you know, all these exercises during each stage of my pregnancy, postnatally, which I found so helpful.
Yeah.
Because I think once you've had your baby, you're kind of just like, right, I want to get running.
Yeah.
I want to do sit-ups.
Really
everything back to normal. And for me, she was just incredible because she was like, okay, I know you want to do that, but just actually think about what your body's done.
Yeah.
Think about how your abdominal muscles have separated.
Everything's
switched off and loose. And she just gave me all these like really gentle exercises to do, which you think, oh, I'm not going to make that much difference.
And it's boring and slow.
And it's boring. It takes a long time. And actually they are the best exercises to do because it gives you that base to then when you do start running, you know that you're strong. You're not going to have any horrible issues that, you know, so many women have post-pregnancy.
Because they just don't realise.
Because they rush and, and don't know the right exercises. So,
and it's not just postnatal, that it's regular exercising as well. And
yeah, so there's pregnancy workouts, there's postnatal, and then there's general fitness workouts.
Okay, I'm going to download it.
Yeah, do some circuits. So they're just circuits that I do all the time now just to kind of fit into, you know, busy life and just find a way to exercise and exercise efficiently. So I know I'm getting the best out of, you know, like a 20 minute workout as opposed to doing something that's not actually going to
be effective,
make that much difference.
I did wonder, what's your training schedule like now you've retired? Do you train every day still?
No, absolutely not. Okay. I actually would like to train every day now, ironically, but there's just not the time. And obviously with the kids and work and everything else that's going on around, I do like to find that time just to switch off and have 20 minutes, half an hour here and there. So I probably do like 3 sessions a week.
Oh, that's good. That's a good balance.
Yeah, just to have that balance.
Yeah.
And I think as the kids get older, you know, time frees up and I'll probably do a little bit more. But again, it's just having that balance and being able to fit little bits in here and there.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, that's cool. I'm definitely going to download it. It's called Jenis.
Jenis, yeah.
And that was your nickname at school, is that right?
My school friends used to call me Jenis and that's always stuck. So yeah, they'll be claiming that.
I was wondering actually, back in the days of school days and, you know, before you were the Jessica Ennis that we knew, who was it that kind of inspired you onto this path? Because you're an inspiration for not just women, a lot of men as well. Were there kind of key people that inspired you to become the person we know?
Yeah, I think more than anyone, it was my parents, to be honest. They, you know, they introduced me to athletics and they were the ones who took me to training camps and drove me around the country to different competitions. My grandparents were a massive part in, you know, helping fund my athletics and, and, you know, get me to training after school and all those little things that, you know, we'll end up doing in a few years' time with our kids, which is so important. And then I met my coach, Tony Minicello, and he kind of took things from there, you know, nurturing me as a young athlete, teaching me the event.
Were your parents sporty themselves then? Do they have that background?
Not really, no. They both did school sport and my dad was a bit of a sprinter. I think my mum did high jump a bit, but nothing. There's no one in the family that have been, you know, really sporty.
So they must be very proud of all your achievements then.
Yeah, I think they still, I know if we talk about it, they're still just kind of a bit shocked like I am. You know, they just had, you know, 2 daughters. They sent us off to like a summer camp at the athletics club in Sheffield, and my mum just remembers a coach coming up saying, oh, she, you know, Jess is a really good runner, you should sign her up to the club. And my mum just thought, yeah, you know, she enjoys it, you know. I never thought that anything would really come of it. And then years went by and I started picking up medals at school level, Yorkshire Championships, North of England, and then it all progressed to Europeans, Worlds, Olympic titles, and it just incredible, really. So they're very proud.
Every day in America, 60 million packages are delivered, but we don't always know what's inside.
He bent down to pick the package up. That's when the device detonated.
Danger is everywhere. No one is safe in Austin, Texas, as law enforcement hunts a serial bomber for 19 days. From Sony Music Entertainment, Campside Media, and Pegalo Pictures, this is Witnessed. 19 Days. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts to binge all episodes or listen weekly wherever you get your podcasts.
You may have heard of the podcast Juicy Scoop. Wondered what it is? Why aren't you listening? Well, I'm its host. Created it, been doing it for 7 years. I'm Heather McDonald of Juicy Scoop with Heather McDonald. Now, I could tell you why you should be listening to my show, but my listeners wanted to write the ad for me, and here are some of the things they said. Not your regular Juicy podcast. Catch up on all the juicy topics from Hollywood and pop culture to true crime and beyond. Heather McDonald's Juicy Scoop always has great guests, great laughs, and great gossip. It's a comedian's take on the hottest headlines. Juicy Scoop is the pop culture news you want to hear. No BS, no filter, no filler. Raw, real, and in the moment. Throw in the hilarity of amazing comedians that you will instantly be obsessed with, a juicy crime story, and a dash of normal life in LA moments, and you've got yourself an amazing week of Juicy Scoop. 2 episodes every week, every Tuesday and Thursday. It will never let you down.
Also from Something Else.
How did we get here? With Claudia Winkleman and Professor Tanya Byron. In these in-depth, one-on-one therapy sessions, we dig deep into personal stories with fascinating and emotional revelations. A passionate, insightful, and moving experience with clear outcomes to each episode.
He is as anxious about attachment with you as you are with him.
Oh, wow. That's crazy, isn't it? Oh, that's a weird feeling.
Wait, so... Oh, God. Don't you just feel like, whoa, why didn't I know that all along?
Listen now in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all good podcast apps.
So when you met Tony, I mean, obviously it's such a key relationship in your life. Did you instantly know you wanted him to be your coach, or was it something that gradually developed?
No, I definitely didn't want him to be my coach at first. Yeah, he was really...
Hi, Tony, if you're listening.
Yes, he's so nice. No, he was really quite a scary character at that time. Mm. And I was quite young and athletics was just about it being a hobby and just having fun, whereas he was, you know, a proper coach. And
yeah.
He obviously saw potential in me and wanted, you know, didn't want to waste that. So he wanted to coach me and show me how to do everything the right way. And I suppose I felt a bit overwhelmed at first
because
I hadn't really seen athletics in that way. And, you know, thankfully he grew as a coach, I grew as an athlete, and he, you know, took me from, you know, a 13-year-old that couldn't do any of the events really to Olympic champions. So he was a massive, massive part of why I was able to be so successful.
And it must be great sharing, you know, you share the hard work and the commitment together, and then you share the successes together. Mm. But is it a roller coaster of a relationship? Like, I'm thinking, say, in my career, where you work with agents and managers, sometimes you agree, sometimes you disagree, and people get passionate if they have your best interests at heart.
Yeah.
I mean, is it one of those kind of fiery relationships?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, like you say, when you're so passionate about something, yeah. You both work really hard for something, it can go up and down. It's not all plain sailing and, you know, you're instantly successful. You know, it takes years of hard work to get a little bit of success.
And people they know you as a celebrity or an iconic athlete. They don't really know the slog.
No, And I think particularly with the London Olympics, it kind of brought the Olympics and athletics to the forefront of everyone's mind, even non-sport fans. But actually, you know, I'd been around for years before then trying to get to championships and trying to win medals and train.
You weren't new to this. You'd been behind the scenes.
Exactly, And, you know, me and Tony, we work incredibly well together. But, you know, when you have injuries or setbacks and you get frustrated, it can be hard because you're both working towards one goal, but you are essentially very different personalities.
Of course, yeah.
And one's a coach and one's an athlete.
Yeah, and you touched on the injury there. I mean, we all know about your injury. Tell me about that time. It must have been a very difficult time in your life.
Yeah, so I felt like I was such a fortunate athlete and that I never really had injuries. I felt really lucky. And then it was once I graduated from uni, I started training a little bit harder, put all my energy into trying to get to the Olympics, which was in Beijing in 2008. And unfortunately, everything just kind of unraveled. I picked up 3 stress fractures in my right foot. And, you know, I thought I'd be missing 2 weeks of training. It turned out I was missing months of training and an Olympics. So it was a really heartbreaking time, really devastating. And a difficult time, but a really, really important time in my career and gave me a new sense of, like, direction and perspective on my career.
Well, you just lightly skimmed over. You just said, oh, I graduated. I'm like, hold on a minute. You're academic as well. You actually studied psychology.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you do that? People usually choose, I go to uni or I specialise in something. And you did both. How did you find time to do that?
I suppose, again, it was down to my parents. So my mum would always say, you know, keep doing your athletics. If you're enjoying it, keep doing it, but don't forget about your school stuff. Yeah. And I just wanted to go to university. I wanted to have something else in my locker. I wanted to have a bit of a backup plan because sport can be so fragile and you can be an amazing athlete at the top of your game and it could all change in an instant. Mm-hmm. So I think I always had that feeling of it could all end really quickly.
So do you think it helped you when you had that injury, having studied psychology? Because I guess a lot of that is in, not necessarily in the mind, but the psychology of how you deal with it and how you reframe it and how you look at failures and success.
Yeah, definitely. I think I've always been really fascinated with psychology and human behaviour and how we view things and how we act. It's always something that's really fascinated me, and that's why I wanted to study psychology. So although it wasn't a specific sports psychology degree. It was a general psychology degree. I still feel that I learned certain things within my degree that I could apply to being an athlete. And I think, yeah, it gave me, definitely gave me a lot of mental toughness. And I think that's been one thing that I've been able to have throughout my career that's allowed me to go on to achieve what I did, just having that mental strength.
And I wonder, I mean, a lot of the people that listen to this podcast are people that are coming to it for support on mental health, advice on confidence, anxiety. And I was thinking about how I could talk to you about that. And then I thought, well, back to that summer of 2012, all our eyes were on you.
Yeah.
You know, it was like not just this country, the world, you know. And you'd have to be very robust and confident. And, you know, how do you get to be that person? And how do you cope with that amount of pressure?
Yeah, I think it's so easy for me now to sit here and be like, yeah, I loved every minute of it. It was great. Mm. It was, you know, the best time of my life. But if I actually take myself back to that time, it was hard because I was nervous for you. it was so much pressure. And I think I put so much pressure on myself because I was like, this is like a once in a lifetime opportunity. I'm never going to have this again. I don't want it to go wrong.
Yeah.
But equally, everybody else expected me to win. And if I'd come away with a silver medal, that would have been an absolute failure.
Yeah, which is crazy to say, isn't it?
Yeah. So it was really, really strange time. But I think having that consistency of great people around me, my family, my team, all those consistent people that have been around me for the years leading into the London Olympics, they helped me so much and they gave me perspective. And my coach would say to me, it's just another heptathlon. You know, you're competing against the same girls. You've done all the training. So when I stepped out onto the track, I did have confidence because I just told myself, I've done this so many times.
I can do it. Yeah.
I've done training that is much harder than what I'm going to have to do now. I'm ready for it. And just do it.
So do you think you approach things in your life with a kind of failure's not an option approach?
I don't think about it. I just don't let my mind even wander into that. And I know that can be so hard. And, you know, it's very easy to try and think positive and then you start drifting off to the negatives that could happen. But I literally did not even let myself think, all those people are watching.
Right.
What if I fall over the hurdle? Because I think if you start thinking all those negative thoughts, they can become a reality.
Yeah. So you really believe in that?
Absolutely. I think that if I had lined up for the hurdles and in the back of my mind I was thinking, oh, what if I fall over the first hurdle? I probably would have fallen over the first hurdle because it's in there. Mm-hmm. I planted that seed. Whereas I stepped up on that line and I was like, I'm going to blast out of these blocks harder than I've ever blasted out of them. I'm going to attack every hurdle. And that's all I thought about. It wasn't about
falling. So do you believe in that visualization then?
Yeah, massively. Yeah. I think you can take it into every part of your life. Mm. I think that if you visualize, you know, a perfect outcome and you keep thinking about it and telling your mind that, then I think it really helps in making it physical.
Is there any other things you do mentally to prepare outside the physical training? Is there any tips, like when there's something big and something happening, is there a way that you get your mind in the right place?
I think it's different for everyone, but I suppose I just play down situations. Mm-hmm. So instead of letting a situation overwhelm me and get very big, which is very easy to do if you've, for me, you know, going on stage or presenting an award or talking in front of lots of people, that can be quite nerve-wracking.
Oh,
because
that's interesting.
I wouldn't think
you'd be nervous.
But it's not what I normally, like on a track, I'm comfortable.
Yeah.
But, you know, presenting or commentating, that's a different world for me.
Yeah.
So I do feel nervous, but I suppose my coping strategy is play it down. Like just don't think about
the bigger picture.
Just be calm. Just do it. Don't overthink everything. Don't start getting yourself in a flap. Just stay calm. And I think that definitely helps.
So do you have areas in your life where you lack confidence or you can't apply the mindset that you apply to, say, sport? And
I think it's when it's just new challenges. Mm. I think sometimes I can take the approach of, oh, no, I'm going to say no to that because actually that's new and I'm a bit uncomfortable. I just don't think I'll do that. Where actually I think I'm trying to embrace new things because I think you grow and you adapt and you know, you have bits of failure, but you learn from it and you get better. Mm. And it's stepping out of your comfort zone and doing something new, which I'm trying to do like a little bit more of, which I think is good for me.
And you really did do that after giving birth. It was, what, 15 months you went back. I mean, they say like you're postnatal for 12 months anyway, don't they?
Yeah, yeah.
I know with my children, I went back to work. The first one I had 5 months off, which actually felt like a long time.
Yeah.
And with the second one, the pregnancy... it took a longer time to conceive. Mm. So in the end, the dates that I fell pregnant were more unplanned.
Yeah.
And I'd booked to go on a tour around the country and a speaking tour. And I'd already sold the tickets. So I had to go back to work 30 days after.
Oh, wow.
So, and I'm just looking back, thinking about when I did that and everything's changed, you know, head to toe, inside, outside. What was it like for you to go back to such an extreme climate from motherhood and only 15 months later?
Yeah, it was honestly the hardest thing that I've done because, like you say, you've changed so much and you just feel so different and you see things differently. And it's not all about you, it's about your baby and being there, and you question everything you do and you worry that you've made the wrong decisions and you worry that you're affecting them. It's just everything is all consuming. And I think I slowly started easing back into training around about 4 months.
Oh, okay.
So I was quite flexible with what I could do. So it wasn't like going back to a full-time job or a 9-to-5. I could train a bit and then come back and go back and train. And it was relatively flexible, but it was hard because I was literally going back to training and I couldn't do half the things I could do before.
Frustrating.
I was so slow. I had lost all my strength. I was at the back of running groups all the time. I just couldn't find that extra gear that I had before. And I really, really doubted whether I could actually, you know, qualify for another major championships at that stage.
But you could. You were successful and you know, it was amazing for us all to see you do it.
Yeah, it was probably one of my greatest achievements, you know, firstly qualifying for the World Championships the following year, but actually winning was such a surreal moment because only really myself and my husband and my close family knew how hard it was. You know, how up and down I was, how much I just worried that I was doing this and it wasn't going to be worth it. Mm-hmm. Or was I going to regret it? Or should I just stop? And I was just constantly like being tugged.
Yeah.
And then when I won that gold medal, I just knew it was all, you know, it was all done in the right way and it was worth it. And I could take that back to Reggie. And he was a massive part of all of that.
Do they understand your career, your children?
Liv doesn't. Right. She's only two, so she doesn't really.
My daughter
really
Penelope's
get it.
Two. Yeah.
They know. Like I said, you know that mummy used to do running, and they're kind of does, but doesn't. But Reggie does. You know, he's five now, and he's at school, so obviously people say to him things now, and it's all very different.
Well, kids are exactly the same age then, because my eldest is five and my youngest is two. So it's a nice gap, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a really nice gap, and I feel that it's kind of nice and balanced now. Mm. They play together and it's lovely.
So he must be really proud, Reggie, of you.
Yeah, I think so. He's getting to that like cool age, you know, where he wants to like do his hair a little bit.
I noticed,
And I was just laughing the other day because we've got this picture up in the toilet and it's me crossing the finish line. It's a photo finish of the hurdles. And we're in there and he was just like, "Mummy, you look really different on that picture." And I was like,
"Cheers,
what do you mean? Is it because I'm just not wearing my crop top and running knickers? Is that why?" But they're just so like brutally honest.
And
just makes me laugh so hilarious.
Bless them. I mean, obviously you get amazing highs from being a parent, but I did wonder, do you miss the adrenaline? You know, now you're retired, can anything replace that adrenaline or do you just not need it anymore?
I suppose I really feel I don't need it. When I commentate and I watch athletics live, I do absolutely get that adrenaline, nervous energy. And, you know, I remember commentating at the World Championships and sat with Denise when Katarina was about to break my British record. And I was sat there going, "Oh gosh, this is awful, this is awful." And I really do feel that adrenaline, that nervous energy. And I like that feeling, but I know what it takes to be on the track, and I know what it takes to be at that level again and to perform in that way. And it takes a lot of sacrifice, a lot of tears and stress, and it's a really full-on time of your life, and I don't miss that anymore.
Yeah, you know what goes into it.
Yeah, I feel like I've done that part of my life, and I'm actually enjoying watching and, you know, being a mum and doing other things. It's just different now.
Well, it's quite amazing, because I guess my first question to you was, do you ever feel dissatisfied? And actually, it sounds like you're in a really good place where you are satisfied, you've achieved what you wanted to, and now you can enjoy the next phase of your life.
Yeah, I feel so lucky that I was able to, you know, start my career the way I did. And it wasn't a smooth ride all the way through, but it got me to some incredible highs. And I would never have imagined that I would have achieved that. So to have been in that position, to have been able to say, right, I'm finished now, I would like to retire and retire on my own terms.
What a great feeling.
An amazing feeling, because it's very unique. And so many people are forced into retirement through, you know, not for any choice of themselves, but through injury.
Mm.
So, I do feel that, I'm sat here having looked back on an amazing career and two amazing children that bring me so much joy. Life is very fulfilling.
Oh, it's amazing to hear. I mean, you've always been an inspiration to me, and you've always encouraged me to never give up and to break through boundaries and weakness. So I think now I'm going to go home and download the Genesis app and start training like you.
Yeah, come and do a workout with me.
No way. I'll just do it at home in my pants. Not next to you in your pants. But thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I hope that other people will get a lot from what you've said as well, because I know you motivate lots of people in different areas in life. So.
Oh, I hope so too. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Katie Piper's Extraordinary People. If you haven't already, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. If you enjoyed this, please help us spread the word. Rate and review the show where you got this, or share on socials.